Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Northwest Passage. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald.
I'm the host of Morning Edition, Ani Katz.
And I'm news reporter Brian Bull.
And I'm news reporter Chris Lehman.
We'll be hearing from Chris and Brian about the stories they're covering this week, as well as a check-in on the legislative session in just a moment. But first, Ani, you've been plugged into the early morning news. What are some of the top stories this week on KLCC?
So I'll start with one that we talked about this morning. The U of O's Pioneer Statue turned 100 years old this week. Dozens of students and faculty members, however, are calling for it to be removed. Our very own Mallory Begay attended a protest against the statue earlier this week. The white bearded man holds a whip and a rifle and was installed in 1919 at the center of campus. And those seeking its removal say it glorifies violence, especially against indigenous people. Last year, the U of O created a committee to review artwork around campus, including the Pioneer statue, and a full report is expected this fall.
Yeah, Mallory did also interview the historian who just put out a paper on this statue, and it talks a little more about the origins of the statue, and that's at our website, klcc.org, if you want a little more in-depth look.
And this reflects what we're seeing a lot in recent years, especially in the Deep South, where you have a lot of Confederate statues, the dedications to generals and other figures of the Confederacy being challenged and in some cases being removed or relocated. So that similar movement might be happening here with some of the pioneer era statues in Oregon, I think tells volumes of how people are reexamining history, both here and elsewhere.
And I think also taking a look at some of the names of certain buildings at the U of O campus, and I'm sure campuses across the state as well.
Yeah, I know that's happened at Oregon State University. They changed some of the names of buildings because of concerns over that legacy of racism.
People being tied to the KKK and other groups.
Exactly. So something else that that keeps popping up, so we're going to come back to it, is that after late last month, that would be April, declaring it officially over, there are now, again, 7 confirmed cases of measles in Washington as of right now. As of last week, 880 cases of measles have been confirmed in the U.S. this year. That's the greatest number since 1994, according to the CDC. And again, this is after an outbreak in Southwest Washington, kind of at the beginning of the year, which infected, I think, ultimately over 70 people, was declared officially over, and now it's not again.
So this was an election week. We had an election on Tuesday, Ani.
So Eugene voters overwhelmingly approved the renewal of a levy to support the 4J school district. Now, I just have to go over this really quick because it is confusing even for myself. The difference between the bond, which voters approved in November, and the levy is that a bond helps with the construction and facilities, and a levy goes towards operating expenses. So is that clear to everybody?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good distinction to make.
I know it is. It's very confusing. Now, turnout in the election was only about 26%, at least in Lane County. So the levy passed 71% to 28%. It covers about 10% of the budget, which translates to 26 school days. Rachel, you spoke with school board member Anne-Marie Levis. She said that the passage of the levy should help keep class sizes down and bring services back, like counselors, mental health care, and PE. And as a 4J parent, those are things that we really see lacking in our schools.
Having to cut 10% out of our budget would have been really tragic. It really has helped us maintain our class sizes. We've been able to add some things back recently with counselors, mental health, some PE.
Along with the Student Success Act that was recently signed by the governor, this could mean a really serious fresh start for Oregon schools since the passage of Measure 5 in 1990.
We also had a ballot measure to get a bond levy passed for the 60-year-old Lane County Courthouse. That failed, I believe, on roughly 58% to 41% at last check. We've been through that building a number of times, and the proponents of this wanted to make the case that the features, the appliances, the layout is very obsolete, cramped. So they were really hoping to be able to have this measure pass, and then that would be also combined with roughly $100 million in state and federal funding for, I believe, a $252 million package that in turn would create a whole new courthouse with more modern, more spacious facilities. Lane County Commissioner Joe Burney was very helpful and told KLCC that he hopes these funds would still be available if and when the county tries again to pass that bond. So they're not giving up by any stretch.
We're exhausted, but we will be at the beginning of reassessing if there is a next step, and I think there will be, and what that next step will be here probably in a couple of weeks.
And it was interesting to me in looking at the comments that were made on the KLCC Facebook page when the story was posted. It seemed clear from the people posting there that the county had not made its case. I mean, the election results would sort of speak to that. But we're talking about a building that the vast majority of people in Lane County have never actually stepped foot inside. There were sort of comments that suggested, well, they have the new federal courthouse there. Why do they need another one, even though those are completely separate branches of government? So, you know, again, I think if this comes back to the ballot, that the county is really going to have to think about its messaging and explain why this matters to people, especially in the far-flung places of the county that couldn't even really tell you where this courthouse is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it affects everyone in the county to have a justice system, but not everyone in the county uses the courthouse on a regular basis. So it's hard to, I think it's hard for a lot of people to see what the need is.
Yeah, it's very different from schools where you have a school in virtually every community. You may have attended the school or your children do. So again, it's very different when it's out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people.
Yeah. Not many people are taking their kids regularly to the courthouse. And that's probably a good thing.
Okay, well, anything else, Ani, from the news that you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's why it's so nice to have our Salem correspondent, Chris Lehman, here so that he can tell us all about what happened in the Capitol this week.
And Chris, I guess that's your cue.
Sure, yeah. And I am actually joining you from the State Capitol building right now, where the lawmakers are furiously trying to get as much work done as possible heading into the Memorial Day weekend. We heard this week that because of the great big backlog of bills in the House, that it's possible the House of Representatives will start meeting 6 days a week when they come back from the holiday. And that backlog being caused by some, we'll say, political differences. The Republicans are requiring that all bills be read in their entirety on the floor of the House. As you can imagine, this takes a very, very long time to do in some cases. That being said, the lawmakers have about a month, a little bit more than a month, to wrap up their work for this legislative session. They can put aside most of what they're working on because policy bills, if they don't pass, then they just don't pass. But they do have to finish up the state budget by the end of June, or else that could lead to state agencies shutting down. So they're still, you know, well within the zone of getting that work done. But everybody's starting to look at the clock in a real concerned way at this point.
Now, Chris, one of the things that you've been covering is some efforts to expand or change Oregon's death with dignity legislation. Can you update us on what's so far survived in those bills?
Sure. And it's interesting because, you know, the Death with Dignity Act has been around and in effect for more than 20 years, but there have been very few changes, and most of those changes have been technical in nature during that time. So this year was sort of the first strong push that I've seen for making changes to the Death with Dignity Act that would, you know, make fundamental differences in how it's used and who can use it. That being said, it appears that for this legislative session, the only change that will be made is going to be one that allows people to skip the 15-day waiting period between your first request and second request, but only if your doctor says you have less than 15 days to live. So, you know, of course, that hopefully doesn't describe anybody listening to this, but if it were, then you could, you know, not wait the prescribed or the normal 15 days to make a second request. That's a fairly narrowly focused change, but it does make a significant difference for a small group of people who maybe are just you know, first hearing about the law or get a really aggressive diagnosis that happens in some cases. There were other efforts to change the law this session, including allowing people to use an IV tube to take the deadly prescription drugs instead of taking it orally. Some people don't have control over their hands, and this would have allowed them to do that. That bill does not appear to be moving forward, as were some other bills that would have really made some aggressive changes, like getting rid of the 6-month waiting, or not waiting period, but normally you can only use it if you have less than 6 months left to live. A bill to get rid of that time frame is not moving forward as well. But yeah, with a lot of things that don't get passed in Salem, we could see those come back in a future session.
Chris, and they've been working on something having to do with capital punishment in Oregon as well. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. This is a bill that would not get rid of capital punishment, but would limit the number of crimes for which it could be applied. So it would not apply to anybody who is already on death row. I believe that's just under 36 people in Oregon. So this is kind of a way that advocates for getting rid of the death penalty have decided to use to, if not get rid of the death penalty, then to severely limit its applicability. Interestingly, when it came up for a vote on the Senate floor this week, it passed by a relatively comfortable margin with relatively little floor debate. So it's normally a hot button issue, but this time it passed. Now it still has to go over to the Oregon House and get to the governor. But it's interesting the dynamics of it. Maybe it's just sort of not enough of a curtailment of the death penalty to really get opponents riled up, but we'll see where it goes from here.
Brian, you've been working on a few different things this week. Can you share a little bit?
Probably the most rancorous one that I covered was Tuesday, where as part of a nationwide rally called Stop the Ban, we had roughly, by my guesstimate, 400 to 500 people gather on the steps of the federal courthouse here in Eugene. There were many speakers. There were protesters. I talked to one who was dressed up as someone from The Handmaid's Tale. This is based on a novel from Margaret Atwood, where the main characters in a dystopia where women are essentially property and the fertile ones are controlled by the state. Prompting a lot of this was the recent restrictions on abortion passed in Georgia and Alabama especially, which both sides of the argument say is going to push this to the national forefront to the U.S. Supreme Court. One example is the fact that under Alabama's ban, any doctor performing an abortion could be put into prison for 99 years. Among the speakers Tuesday was Lisa Gardner. She's CEO of Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon. She spoke to a very fired up crowd who want their reproductive rights preserved.
We're not going to stand for this. In Oregon, we have been leading the country in access to reproductive health care.
Both abortion rights advocates and abortion opponents see these bans, again, as direct challenges to Roe versus Wade, the 1973 decision. It'll hit the U.S. Supreme Court when it's at its most conservative in years, particularly with two justices that were placed there by President Trump. It'll be interesting to see how fast this goes up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm sure many people are going to be watching it very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. The other thing happening nationally, which I've touched on before, has to do with infrastructure. President Trump and the House Democrats are at odds. They had a big meeting planned for infrastructure, which fizzled. Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, said she believed the president was engaged in a cover-up right before the meeting, and this sent Trump into a bit of a huff, you could say. He says he can't work with Democrats while he feels these investigative probes are underway. And this all leaves the $2 trillion infrastructure plan in limbo. Oregon Democratic Congressman Peter DeFazio, chair of the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure, told CNN that he was frankly stunned at President Trump's response.
I mean, the meeting we had 3 weeks ago was very positive. The president himself bid the number up to $2 trillion. We were talking $1 to $1.5 trillion. And we had a very positive interaction. And the agreement was 3 weeks. We'll come back and we'll talk more substantively about exactly what goes in the program and how we're going to pay for it. But, it was a bit odd because his seat's in the middle, right, just about opposite me. Yeah. He just came in the door, didn't go toward his seat, and then pronounced that until we stop doing our legitimate job, which is oversight of the administration as an independent branch of government, Article 1 of the Constitution, that he will not work with us on infrastructure and, I don't know, whatever else.
Both DeFazio and Trump have acknowledged wanting to really work together on upgrading, fixing the nation's harbors, railways, highways, and airports. So I guess it's time to pop the popcorn and watch how this all unfolds. Skeptics on both sides of the political aisle note that Speaker Nancy Pelosi is pretty calculated, and this certainly would not have been a mere slip of the tongue. So what is she hoping to accomplish by upsetting Donald Trump? And while the president was very upset and lashed out against Democrats at a press conference, there just happened to be some immaculately printed posters, stacks of them, challenging the concept of an impeachable offense titled the Mueller Investigation by the Numbers, which they just happened to have ready to pass out to reporters.
Mm. Once again, you're listening to KLCC's Northwest Passage. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald with Chris Lehman, Brian Bull, and Ani Katz, and we're going to wrap up by talking about something else from the news that stuck with us this week, and we'll start, Brian.
Sure. The big trend on Twitter, for those who follow Twitter, was the topic of cartoon crushes. These are animated characters that you may have watched on Saturday mornings that you may have felt a little pitter-pat in your heart for when you saw them on screen. Trending right now are Jessica Rabbit, who was not in a Saturday morning cartoon. She was in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? April O'Neil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Aladdin from the Disney movie. So speaking for myself, I'd be curious to know who else has this who else harbors this? Probably my earliest crush was Daphne Lane from Scooby-Doo in my earlier years. And later on, Jane Lane from MTV's Daria animated series.
Oh, well referenced.
Like those punker chicks.
I don't think anything from Who Framed Roger Rabbit would do that for me, because it was really one of the first scary movies that I ever saw. I mean, still to this day, I don't know if I can watch the end of that. but it's not exactly a prince character, although from Cinderella, the prince. But I'm actually talking about the fairy tale theater version of that, because it was Matthew Broderick. And for me back in the day, that did make my heart go pitter-patter.
Oh, okay. Rachel, Chris, any cartoon crushes on your end?
I can't think of any right now.
I can't think of any either, although I will have to say that Who Framed Roger Rabbit is definitely one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh my gosh. Chris, you and I cannot have a movie night together.
I will say, you know, there's an animated version of Star Trek, so I'll probably Spock on the animated version of Star Trek. But that would not be like a childhood crush. So.
maybe Brian's heart would go pitter-patter for Captain Kirk or something,
probably,
in the cartoon.
Very possible.
No one comes between me and Daphne.
Hey, Daphne, you're okay now. Will you tell me what I'm doing in this silly costume and all wet?
You were in a trance.
We had to wake you up. Where's Freddy?
Freddy?
We were in the costume tent. Then all went blank.
Chris, anything sticking with you from this week's news?
Well, this wasn't a news story as such, but a few days ago here at the Capitol, the fire alarm went off in the middle of the day, disrupting a bunch of hearings. And of course, everybody, myself included, trudged outside. Fortunately, it was not raining at the time. As it so happened, the Salvation Army brass band was in the building as well. They had played the opening ceremony in the house that morning. They had a display inside. So they brought their instruments out onto the front steps of the Capitol while everybody was milling around waiting to see if there was an actual fire, and they set up and they started playing. It felt very much like we were on the deck of the Titanic. Fortunately, there was no fire and everybody could go back inside, but it was sort of a fun little event in what was otherwise an inconvenient moment at the Capitol.
Always <That's> exciting.
Never a dull moment.
Yeah. The State House hit an iceberg.
Well, guys, Game of Thrones ended on Sunday night. I have been a fan of the series for as long as it's been on. And
are there spoilers ahead? Because I've yet to watch it.
No. I guess I should stop that right
covering
there.
My ears. I'll just be one of those
people who will not fully complain about this past season. Brian really is covering his ears right now. But nor will I give the showrunners a full pat on the back. So I'm kind of glad that the story has come to an end. Little sad about the ending, you know, but it's over, you know, it kind of went out with a whimper.
I would just mention that I'm looking forward to listening back to Terry Gross's interview with Howard Stern from last week. I was never really a Howard Stern fan, but I caught his appearance on the Colbert Show, the late show with Stephen Colbert, and I really enjoyed that interview. So he has a new book out, and he's totally everywhere, you know. But it's interesting to hear what he has to say. He had some interesting insights about President Trump on the show.
And he sounds totally smitten with Terry Gross, too, when they first started the interview. He said that he was nervous and didn't want to make a fool of himself on Fresh Air.
Aww.
Well, thanks so much, everyone, for joining us this week for the Northwest Passage. I'm KLCC News Director Rachel McDonald.
I'm the host of Morning Edition, Ani Katz.
I'm news reporter Brian Bull.
And I'm news reporter Chris Lehman.